to the Moral and Ethical Leadership Podcast, hosted by the BYU Management Society Salt Lake Chapter. I'm Dave Austin.
And I'm Kurt Frankham.
And we hope you're all safe and healthy during this incredibly difficult time. We've been doing this podcast for about a year with our monthly luncheon speakers. And due to the crisis that we're currently in, we want to change it up a little bit. We're starting a new guest series called Voices of Light.
We know there's a lot of people suffering out there right now, whether it's physically, emotionally, or economically, and our hope is to bring you guests who can uplift, inspire, and have honest conversations with us. We plan to have these interviews on a regular basis, and hopefully this can help all of us get through this time together.
And we're so grateful to have with us today Dr. Derwin Gray, lead pastor at Transformation Church in South Carolina, and also former BYU football great. Derwin, welcome. Thank you for being here with us.
Hey, thank you, guys. It is a great honor and privilege for me to be with you all.
And it's a great honor for us, especially those of us who grew up watching you be an amazing player for BYU. And I have to ask you, we had not too long ago Steve Young on our podcast. I'm wondering if you've had any interactions with him and anything you'd like to share about Steve.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So when I was at BYU from 1989 to 1992, in the off seasons, Steve would come back and he'd lift weights with us. He'd play basketball with us. And of course, all of us were just enamored with the great Steve Young. And when I was in college, he wrote me a note when he played for the 49ers, just encouraging me. And so I always had tons of respect for him. But then in 1995, I'm a team captain for the Colts, and we're playing the San Francisco 49ers, and they were the defending Super Bowl champions, and they came to Indianapolis to play. And man, we just wore them out. And yours truly, I actually intercepted Steve Young to set up a go-ahead winning field goal. And so that's one of the highlights of my career, because when you're, 18, 19 years old, the idea of playing in the NFL is just an idea. And so when your icons, and particularly a BYU alumni, comes back and like he's your guy, and then fast forward a few years, you're competing against him and intercepting him. And so that was one of the highlights of my career, to pick off one of the all-time BYU greats, but one of the all-time greats in football Hall of Fame member. He probably doesn't even remember it, but for me, I'll never forget it. I actually have the game ball here in my office. So yeah, that's my Steve Young story.
Oh, that's so awesome. That's a, what a great story. Yeah. I knew you played in the NFL, followed you, and also follow you now, Derwin, and love, just really grateful for who you are as a person, also for how you represent BYU. For our listeners who may not know, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, and also what are you passionate about, especially during these incredibly difficult times?
Yeah, so I am married to a wonderful girl named Vicky Gray. We actually met January 15th, 1990, my second semester at BYU, and we've been together ever since. She was from Montana. She was at BYU on an academic track scholarship, and we got engaged in college and got married in college, which for us, not being members of the LDS faith, it was kind of strange, but the culture and framework supported it. Like, that was the next step. And so that was one of the blessings of going to BYU, even though I wasn't LDS, that there was a cultural framework that made that acceptable and to be good to get married. And 30 years later, we are together. She and I co-founded our church called Transformation Church, and that's based off of Romans chapter 12, verse 2, be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And so we view ourselves as simply a New Testament church where we want to love Jesus and love people and grow as his disciples. And so we are passionate about the gospel. We are passionate about people. We're passionate about racial reconciliation. We're passionate about justice. We're passionate about blessing and supporting the poor. But also, we are passionate about leadership. We believe that Jesus wants to influence every facet of society, from the White House to the football field and everything in between. And so one of the reasons why I chose to be on this podcast is because, and I say this with humility, is that moral and ethical leadership is in a crisis in our nation. And so we need leaders who have a strong moral compass, who understand, if they're followers of Christ, the ethics of Christ. And so there's no doubt, as Americans, we know how to make money. There's no question about it. But my thing is, in the process of making money and building businesses, how are we treating the souls of people? Are people simply a means to an end, or are people the end of, in and of themselves, that not only do we build great businesses and great academic institutions, but really building great people? And what is a great person? I think it's this: love God, love self, love your neighbor as you love yourself.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I'm curious, Darren, as you look back on your time at BYU, what principles of moral and ethical leadership stand out as far as in the development of those principles during that time?
Yeah, you know, so as a 18-year-old, things does not make as much sense then as it does now. And a lot of times the things that we learned have what's called a rebound effect. It's not till years later that we understand it. But I remember when I took one of my first tests at BYU and the professor left the room, I was looking around like, wait a second, did he just leave? Like, the professor just left. Does he know that we could like cheat and pass notes? And so I'll never forget that. It was kind of like, for the students who are part of the BYU culture, it was like, yeah, that's normal. Like, you sign a code of conduct, like you sign an honor code. And that has always stuck with me, that your yes is your yes and your no is your no. And who are you when no one is watching? Because that's the real you. And so that really, really stuck with me. And even now, like, even though I'm not LDS, like, I'm hard at work recruiting non-LDS players to go to BYU, because I do believe it provides an excellent moral framework. But also, I believe that non-LDS people add something to the LDS culture as well.
I love that. I feel the exact same way. Both those things you said, as far as, you know, you can feel, you can have that framework at BYU, and also we need that diversity, and we also need just to be able to feel of each person's spirit. Derwin, chapter 8 of your The Good Life book is entitled "Happy Are the Peacemakers." Talk to us about that, and how can we be peacemakers today?
Yeah, you know, so just to give some context, I wrote a book, and it came out June 2nd of this year. It's called The Good Life, What Jesus Teaches About Finding True Happiness. And the book is based on the Beatitudes that you find in Matthew chapter 5, verses 3 through 12. And Matthew 5 is the beginning of the greatest sermon ever preached by the greatest preacher ever preached, Jesus. And he opens up with these eight characteristics of a blessed person. And the Greek word for blessed is the word makaros, and it literally means happy. So happy are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. And so let me add this framework here. The happiness that Jesus is inviting us into is not a happiness based on good things happening, but it's a happiness based on Jesus, by grace, making us good for the world. So we're no longer dependent upon circumstances to make us happy. We now rest in the grace of God, who's forming us into his image. And so, happy are the peacemakers is Jesus communicating that we as his people have been created and gifted and called to bring peace. And this is what's important. Peacemaking is not passive. Peacemaking looks like the cross. Jesus goes to the cross because there's conflict between God and between God and humanity. And so Jesus goes into that conflict with reconciliation and love and forgiveness in his hand. And so we, as his followers, we are called to go into the world with love, forgiveness, and reconciliation in our hands. And so that chapter that you're discussing, I actually open up that chapter describing the horrific police brutality case of Rodney King in 1992. And I remember at BYU in 1992, when Rodney King was videoed being beaten on tape, a lot of us black guys on the team were like, finally, people will actually believe that this happens. And as you know, all these years later, there's still discussions about, well, is police brutality real? Is it not? And let me say this. Our church has an incredible relationship with the police. Peacemaking means I can be pro-police and pro-police reform. And so that's one of the issues. But the other issues is that we are seeing incredible racial tensions in our nation. And what I did in that chapter is I gave a theology of racial reconciliation with practical steps. And so it starts with this. How do we reconcile between ethnicities, right? Well, the first thing is it all begins with love. What we say at Transformation Church is this: treat every human being like Jesus Christ died for them because he did. So if Jesus loved them enough to die for them, then that's our gift to do the same. And I don't have to agree with you to love you. So the first thing is love. The second thing is learning how to listen to the story of the other. Just because something, okay, so as a black man, I have never experienced sexual harassment the way a woman will. But I need to listen to that because that woman is my sister made in the image of God. And so oftentimes as black men, we have felt that we haven't been listened to by the majority culture. And love says to listen. Philippians 2:3 says this, do nothing out of selfish ambition, but in humility, consider others better than yourselves. And so listening to the story of another, and what happens is this, Kurt and Dave, is when we listen to the story of another, their story actually brings my better humanity out of me. There's a part of me that I didn't know that I didn't have, but that they bring out of me. So you love, you listen, and then you learn. One of the best experiences of my life is as a 17-year-old, I said to Coach Lavelle Edwards, whom I dearly miss and whom I love, and I wish he was alive to see all the books that I've written and written and to see that I have a doctorate. I'm telling you now, Coach Edwards would take off. He'd say, Dewey has a doctorate? The kid who came to BYU and had a 1.41 GPA his freshman year as a doctorate? God is good. So one of the best experiences for me was being a black kid from a diverse area going to a 98.5% Mormon school, overwhelmingly white, but it was a different kind of white than the white I had experienced in Texas. But it also taught me how to get along with other people. It taught me how to appreciate the LDS story of April 6, 1830, Palmyra, New York, going throughout the Midwest, Independence, Missouri, to somehow building this incredible state in the Salt Lake Basin. It taught me how to appreciate and to understand, and also to gain patience with people who didn't understand me. And so we love, we listen, we learn the other person's story. And then fourthly, we leverage our lives to be an advocate for those who are oppressed. And that's a picture of Jesus. Is sin did not affect him, but he's seen that we were oppressed by sin, meaning we didn't have redemption. And so Jesus comes and identifies with us, takes upon our sin, forgives us, and through the resurrection, by grace, invites us into his forgiveness. And so now we leverage our lives to make peace. And in today's society, guys, as you know, man, there is big business in creating enemies politically. If someone disagrees with you, that means they're a hater. Like, when did it become, I can't disagree with you, but we can still be friends? Like I can disagree with you and still respect you. I can disagree with the means by which you want to make the world better, but we can still partner with that. We need leaders to go into the world making peace like that. And I would argue that it takes more strength to be a peacemaker than to be a rock thrower.
Yeah, that's powerful. So what from your experience, and maybe you sort of answered this already, but see if there's any other insights as far as from a local, church level, things we can do to stimulate some of that in order to help promote that moral and ethical leadership and to promote, connection and that type of thing. What can we do? And maybe what are some things you do with your local congregation to really stimulate some of that culture?
Yeah, absolutely. So our church is incredibly diverse. It's probably 55% white, 40% everything else, rich, poor, middle class, whatever. And so one of the things that we talk about, the first thing, Kurt, is this: all of life is worship. So we tell our students, your school time is worship. You're not just doing homework. You're worshiping God in preparation for how he's going to use you to make an impact in the world. We tell our business leaders, our teachers, we say this, like if they work at Bank of America, we say Bank of America is literally paying your salary so you can be a missionary there. So I view every Christian as a missionary. Wherever you are, that's your mission field. And so in the workplace, in the classroom, wherever you are, you're on mission. And the greatest way to communicate that you love Christ is a life of morality fueled by God's grace. And morality is love God, love your neighbor as you love yourself. You know, one of the ancient church fathers, his name was Saint Augustine. He's a Northern African bishop in the 300 AD. And he said, love God and do whatever you want. So if you're loving God, then what you're going to do is that which brings glory and honor to God. And so those are the type of things that we do. Also, like our church, we adopted 7 schools, public schools. And what we do is we provide backpack meals for them. We provide teacher appreciation. We buy Google Chromebooks. We've started a leadership institute. And so over the last 10 years, we've provided over 300,000 backpack meals for students. Because if there are children in our community who don't eat well over the weekend, I don't believe that's the government's job. I believe that's the church's job. Also, advocacy for pro-life in the womb and outside of the tomb. I broker relationships between the police department and, young blacks who are protesting police brutality. And so there's various ways that we can mobilize people to get involved. And what I would say is Generation Z is really hungry for mobilization. And I think it's our job as the older generation to say, hey man, Jesus cares about the poor. Jesus cares about life in the womb. Jesus cares about a myriad of issues, racism and injustice. And if you do get successful, the goal isn't he or she who dies with the most toys win. It's he or she who allows the love of God to make the world better through them.
That's awesome. Derwin, racial tensions are incredibly high right now in the country and in the world. And you've already alluded to it a little bit. One of my favorite books, though, that I've read is by the Arbinger Institute called The Outward Mindset. And it talks about treating people as people and not objects. What are your thoughts on that? And how do we do that?
I love it because I forget who I heard this from, so I'm just going to quote it myself. That's what us pastors do. The first time we quote who we heard it from, the second time we go, I don't know the name, the third time ago, I was thinking. So I was thinking about this. Typically, we use people and love things when we should love people and use things. And basically what you're saying, Dave, is what we Protestants would call a theology of the Imago Dei. That's a Latin term for the image of God. Every single human being is made in the image of God. One of the most precious sights that I've ever seen at Transformation Church was an older white man with a MAGA hat on and Trump on a shirt with his hands raised, right next to an African-American young lady with an afro with a Black Lives Matter shirt on, and they both had their hands raised, worshiping Christ. Now, they probably will disagree on some secondary issues, but it's important for us to agree on the primary issues. But I'm only going to see you to the level that I name you. If I name you Democrat, if I name you Republican, if I name you this, no, love your neighbor. Every human being is my neighbor that is made in the image of God, that Jesus Christ died for. Therefore, that's how I see them. And if I see people in that way, even my greatest enemy moves my heart, as Jesus said in Matthew 5:44. But I say to you, love your enemies.
Oh, that's powerful. I mean, I just appreciate so much that perspective of the label, and because you naturally fall into that sometimes. You're just, people turn into labels, especially in the social media world that we live in. You know, so anything else we're missing, Derwin, as far as principles from your book that you would feel like would really relate to the moral and ethical leadership?
Yeah. So when you look at the Beatitudes, you know, Jesus starts with happy are the poor in spirit. That means happy are the God reliant. Happy are those who mourn. That means happy are those who are so connected to God's heart. What breaks his heart breaks yours. Happy are the humble. To be humble means this. I don't think less of myself. I just think less about myself and more about God and others. Happy are the peacemakers. Happy are the pure in heart. So basically, the Beatitudes turn you into the kind of person that you would want to be friends with. The Beatitudes turn you into the kind of person that's faithful and trustworthy. So what I would say is, for those who are interested, get my book. There's study questions at the end of every chapter. There's also a Bible study where I video teach. And so I recommend folks read the book, get the Bible study as well, and just immerse yourself for, you know, a few weeks straight with Jesus in the Beatitudes. Like, if this is his first sermon and it's the start of the greatest sermon ever preached, it must be really important for us. And I believe that that's what affects our moral and ethical leadership, because pragmatism means if it works, do it. Moral and ethical leadership says, do it because it's right. And we need more people like that.
Well, Derwin, we are so grateful for you. I've been scribbling notes like crazy, writing, and I can't wait to listen to the interview again and write everything down. Thank you for being the kind of person that you are. We sure appreciate the time that you took with us today.
Thank you, guys. And go BYU, beat Utah.
And we thank all of our listeners for being with us as well. We'll look forward to talking to you again next week on another episode of Voices of Light. Have a great week.